理课堂听 class.com。
Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Welcome to Advanced Class, our window on the world, as we dive the South Pacific and finish our article today. Thank you for joining us in advance, and we have in our panel today
Ethan,
Bill,
and Phil,
and Doris. So thanks for joining us, and we're supposed to be talking about diving, we're talking about islands, we're talking about fish, and everything that has to do with the ocean. But what makes the South Pacific so special, Phil?
Well, the South Pacific is so special because of the weather, which is just really nice year-round, the blue-green, clear water, very relaxing white sandy beaches and palm trees. It's just a beautiful, relaxing place.
Well, I think that we're going to find out that you've been to this one place we're going to talk about today, Moorea Island, that's 12 miles west of Tahiti. Is that right?
That's right. So you can actually see Moorea from Tahiti and the peaks that rise up from it. It just looks very majestic. We used the word majestic yesterday to describe the manta rays, and it just means that something which is very beautiful and powerful. So if you look at Moorea from the ocean or from Tahiti, you're really impressed by its beauty.
Well, if you look at page 21, and I hope you all have a magazine so you can see the photos and look at the map, and it shows Tahiti and Moorea on here. They're big places, but is Bora Bora near that or not?
Actually, Bora Bora is about 150 miles further to the west, to the northwest. So it's about an hour by airplane from Tahiti to Bora Bora.
So I guess some of the places that people usually go, like if you take a plane or you go there from the States or from New Zealand, do they fly to Tahiti usually or what?
Well, yes. From Australia or New Zealand, they would fly to Tahiti. There's a big airport there in Tahiti. We actually flew from Los Angeles, and from Los Angeles to Tahiti was about 7.5 hours.
Hmm. Okay, well, that takes longer to get there than it does to go to Hawaii, because it's farther south, isn't it?
That's right.
Quite close to New Zealand and Australia.
Right.
Okay, so look at the map and look at the pictures, and I hope that some of you will be interested enough to go to the web and check on some of the kind of fish, look at the manta rays, the sharks, and just imagine that you're in the water with them. It gives you a different feeling, doesn't it, Bill?
Well, we talked the last 2 days about this, Doris, just the beauty of the coral and the tropical fish and just all the different colors. And when you do go scuba diving, the peacefulness of it, and being able to be down there and enjoy this for maybe an hour or so, it sounds fantastic.
Well, let's read today about this romantic Moorea.
Romantic Moorea. For visitors interested in more than just diving, Moorea, an island 12 miles west of Tahiti, abounds with sun-drenched tropical palms, mouth-watering island food, and craggy green ridges that rise like walls into charcoal clouds. It is achingly romantic. Experience Moorea with someone you love. Yes, you could lie on a beach all day, but for the adventurous visiting this island, a few more unique experiences await you.
I was fascinated, Doris, by the name French Polynesia. I always wondered, why is it called French Polynesia? And the French were one of the first explorers from Europe in the mid-1700s. There were British and French explorers, but eventually the French did take over the islands. And so that's how it did come to be. And actually, the people living in French Polynesia are citizens of France.
It's interesting to study history and see how the Dutch, the British, the French, and all these people sailed around and found some of these areas and said, oh, this is a beautiful place, and they started little colonies in those areas, didn't they?
Yes, that's right. And when we talk about this area being very romantic, and I also think about the French language, many people say that French sounds very romantic. So I think it kind of adds to that feeling. This is a place that you can go, it'd be a very romantic getaway. You can lie on the beach, and it's away from everything. It's very laid back and just a very nice place to visit.
Well, if you'll notice, when Yvette Cardoza writes articles, she likes to use all these very interesting adjectives and words that describe it. But she says, sun-drenched tropical palms. Well, here are these palm trees, and they are drenched. Like, we usually think the rain drenches things, but the sun comes down and shines on them, so it's just full of sunshine trees. So that's a very kind of kwajangdehua, isn't it? Something a little bit. And then she says, mouth-watering island food. What does that mean?
Well, mouth-watering just means that it smells so good, tastes so good, that it makes your mouth water flow. Our saliva or our mouth water just literally comes out because we're so ready to eat that food.
That's also kind of kwajang. You know, it's a little bit overdone like that. But the craggy green ridges, that means that they're kind of rugged, doesn't it?
Right. There would be sharp edges to them, not rolling hills, Doris. And we can see in that picture there on page 20, you can see how it's craggy. It's pretty rugged.
Well, what about the charcoal clouds? Are the clouds charcoal colored? Looks like it, doesn't it? They're kind of grayish clouds, right?
Well, they could be charcoal colored, depending on if it's going to be raining. Of course, there's probably tropical rains there often. But the next sentence has a phrase in it, Doris, that I know Phil particularly liked.
Especially because he was here on his honeymoon.
Well, it says achingly romantic, and usually we think of ache as like a pain in your body. But I guess for Yvette, something which was achingly romantic means that she felt the romantic feeling so strongly and powerfully.
Yeah, in Chinese you say shuo bu chu lai. You just don't know how to describe it. It's so great. Well, it says that, you know, it's a nice experience, and it would be a good experience by yourself, but with someone you love, it'd be even more interesting. And since you went there on your honeymoon, did you go to this island? And tell us what you did there.
Oh, yes. We went to this island, Moorea. In fact, the picture that you see there on page 20, we walked around that bay, that area of water you see there, right past those mountains. We stayed in an area that had these thatched huts or bungalows with, you know, a dry grass roof with palm trees lining the beach. Did a lot of swimming and snorkeling. Took a kayak, a small boat out on the water. Just a very beautiful place.
So you didn't lie on the beach all day?
Well, no, we didn't lie on the beach all day. We got out and we walked around. We also rode our bicycles part of the way around the island.
Well, I like what comes next, and we're going to talk about another extreme sport, riding an ATV. So let's go to the reading now.
All aboard for an ATV trek. All-terrain vehicles, ATVs, give you a freedom you can't get in a four-wheel drive truck, and certainly not in a bus. ATVs allow you to climb goat paths to places other vehicles can't reach. You wander through plantations of pineapple, banana, oranges, papaya, ginger, and vanilla. You learn Tahitian vanilla costs an astronomical $400 a kilo because it's sun-dried for 6 months, and you climb Magic Mountain 1,000 feet up a steep, rocky path. It's not for the faint of heart, but rewards you with a panoramic view of sailboats anchored in the cobalt waters of Opanohu Bay.
Have you heard of ATVs before?
Oh, sure. ATVs, all-terrain vehicles. These are the kind of vehicles that are very popular to drive in a very rugged or rough area like the desert.
They usually call them four-wheel drives because you can really have all four wheels are free to get out of the ditch when you get in them, I guess, or the rugged roads.
Well, there are many different types and many different names. Sometimes you may hear it called a quad. You may hear it called a four-wheeler. And what this is it's a big car vehicle that is one person. It looks kind of like an oversized motorcycle, and it's got four very large tires around it.
Actually, almost all cars have four wheels on them, don't they? So what's a four-wheel drive, Bill?
Well, this the ATV, Doris, is, as Ethan mentioned, more like a motorcycle. You're looking at just a seat for one person, maybe a second person behind them, and then they are surrounded by these four very, very large, almost they look like balloon tires with big treads on them.
Well, you can climb up these goat paths. Now, goats can climb up very, very narrow paths. I guess there'd have to be enough space on them, but at least they have enough traction so that you can hang on there and not fall down, right?
That's right. And the four-wheel drive vehicles have the advantage of turning four wheels on their axles at once, whereas most vehicles are what we call two-wheel drive, where it's only giving you the traction or pull of two wheels.
Now, if you look on line 7 here, it says you can't get a four-wheel drive truck and certainly not a bus up to these areas. And so we're talking about there is a truck or a type of vehicle that a normal car that uses spins the four wheels, but these four-wheelers are much smaller. They're more like a small motorbike, and these ones do spin four wheels as well, but you can use these to get up these small goat paths.
Well, it sounds to me like a lot of places like Hawaii and different places in Southeast Asia, the Philippines, because you have pineapple, bananas, oranges, papaya, and all these kind of things. But one thing they have there is vanilla, and that's vanilla beans, isn't it?
Yes, vanilla beans. And it says that the Tahitian vanilla is very expensive. It costs an astronomical $400 a kilo.
So if you want to get pure vanilla, we often make it into kind of a syrup, and we use it when cooking quite a bit. And you can get imitation vanilla, which is not the real thing, but real vanilla is expensive.
Well, real vanilla is delicious, and we use astronomical to describe the price of this real vanilla. And oftentimes, Doris, we will say something is astronomical when we think maybe this price is a little bit too high, or maybe actually exceedingly high.
Where does the word come from, though?
Well, it comes from astronomy when we think of outer space. So we're suggesting that the price is very high or very large, almost like outer space.
Imagine that you have to sun-dry these beans for 6 months. That's a long time.
It would be a long time. And I think, too, we can see why they would say it would cost $400. That is a very, very high price, and maybe it is too high. But if it's a six-month-long process, I could understand that they would want to charge quite a bit for it.
Well, you can do other things. You can climb Magic Mountain. It's 1,000 feet up a very steep, rocky path. And it's not for people who are worried or nervous or have a faint heart. It's for people who are kind of brave and bold, isn't it?
Yes, and I'm wondering if Liz and Phil were brave and bold enough to go to the top.
Well, no, we didn't make it up to Magic Mountain. I wish that we had gone there because just walking around the island, we could see it and how it rises so sharply. And I can just imagine this panoramic view from the top. Panoramic just means that you can see all around.
Well, now, Phil, was the weather pretty hot, though? I mean, I can't imagine climbing that mountain if it's hot.
No, it wasn't very hot. In fact, the climate here is always quite nice, anywhere between 70 and 85 degrees, but very seldom more than 85.
So that's like in the 20s centigrade.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then it says you could see the sailboats anchored in the cobalt waters. That's kind of a beautiful blue color, isn't it?
That's right. Cobalt is a blue rock, and so we use it as an adjective here to describe the color of the water. So it's a deep, very beautiful, maybe a lush blue, you could say.
And you might see, particularly at a higher elevation, the bluer color comes through much more clearly.
Well, we do have one more big area to cover yet because we want to see this tiki village. And the tiki has to do with their statues, the tiki gods, and their things that they carve. So let's take it easy in a tiki village.
Take it easy in Tiki Village. Four families live in Tiki Village and spend their days carving statues or showing tourists how they make tapa, prepare copra, coconut, and best of all, cook an underground meal. We watched as a tattooed man dug under the hot coals of a pit oven, unwrapped burlap, then banana leaves to bring up a metal basket filled with the night's dinner. Steamed chicken, pork, and fish, along with bananas, taro, and breadfruit. Dinner was followed by a show featuring dancers in authentic traditional dress, twirling and tossing flaming torches. This fire dance really took our breath away. In fact, we could say the same about our entire South Pacific experience.
Well, this article is kind of a travel article in a way, and yet there are some exciting things. I think swimming with sharks and doing the currents and things like that do make it exciting. But I think just going to a tiki village would be a lot of fun.
And very interesting, too, to experience some of the local Polynesian culture that we're going to see here.
Okay. So you can take it easy there. And it says four families live in this village. So they have a lot of their carvings and statues. And you'll see this in Indonesia. A lot of people like to go around to places like that, the Philippines. And people have these idols or tiki gods and things that they will carve. And, you know, they sell them to tourists, the pictures of them, don't they?
That's right. So they carve a lot of images of these local gods on the wood there, and they sell them. And that's where the name tiki comes from, the different statues. Also, they show tourists how to make tapa. And what is tapa?
Tapa is a strong paper-like fabric made by pounding the inner bark of the paper mulberry tree. So it actually is bark from a tree.
Well, and then they also use coconut for a lot of different things. And they can cook the meal. They can cook it even underground. They can heat it up and put something in there. And so you can have all kinds of different food that you don't get in every restaurant you go to.
The fascinating thing to me about this underground cooking, Doris, is I have seen examples of this in all different parts of the world.
Right.
And here it is in Tahiti. And I believe last month I saw something on TV. They were doing it in Mongolia. And then before I had seen in Africa. So they do this underground cooking.
Well, I think the fact is when they heat up these rocks and things under the ground, they keep their heat a lot better, and then they can have kind of a slow heat, and they can heat everything from sweet potatoes to rice, whatever it is, and it's kind of a slow cook, and they feel that the flavor is much better that way.
And so we see that they, Yvette and her husband watched as a tattooed man dug under the hot coals of a pit oven. Then he unwrapped burlap and banana leaves to bring up a metal basket filled with the dinner for that night.
And it, what was the dinner?
Well, it says steamed chicken, pork, and fish, along with bananas, taro, and breadfruit. Sounds good to me.
Sounds great. You're making me hungry, Phil.
Steamed. And sometimes things like that are steamed in banana leaves, and that gives it a different flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of tribes people do this type of thing. Well, dinner was also followed by a show. And what kind of a show did they have there, Bill?
Well, it featured traditional dancers in authentic dress, and they were twirling and tossing flaming torches. So they had these torches that were on fire, and they're dancing and tossing them around.
Sounds like Hawaii to me. Or if you go to Guam, the island of Guam, you can see all this kind of thing. Polynesian kind of a culture.
That's right. And so many of these places, if you go to, you can see the native people or the first people, or we may sometimes call them the aboriginal peoples, do these different shows. They will have the native dancing, the cultural dancing, and it is quite an interesting experience to go and see because you are really learning parts of their culture through these dances.
And you'll notice that they had tattoos. Now, a long time ago, the people had tattoos in a lot of places, in New Guinea, in Taiwan, the mountain people, certain tribes had these tattoos, and they would know which tribe you're in by the tattoos, and it was an identity thing. And if you didn't have that tattoo, it would be very dangerous for you to travel around because you were considered an enemy. So tattoos identified the ethnic groups that they were.
And I believe, Doris, you were telling us last week about how different tattoos meant maybe you had done certain things. Is that right?
Well, if you've taken a head, then you get one on your chin, and when you're born, you get one on your forehead. And so you say, oh, that's a real headhunter. He has taken somebody's head, because those were things that people had to show their manhood with. And so these tattoos really mean something. But the thing that really is interesting to me, because I have seen people in some of these native countries with the tattoos, now I see the young people want to put tattoos on again. And I say, are we going forward or backward? You know, people got over the tattoos. People who had tattoos would have an operation to have them taken off because they didn't want to look like they were that way. Now people get the tattoos put on them. So how do you figure that out, Phil?
Well, personally, I wonder why a lot of people put tattoos on today. I think they are trying to make a fashion statement. They want people to notice them. That's different than what you said, where actually these groups had to be identified by the mark.
But they do try to identify. They're part of a kind of a culture, sometimes a subculture too. Certain gangs have certain tattoos on them, and they've often identified people by that type of thing. And so a tattoo can be a bad or a good thing. They put tattoos on the Jewish people. They tattooed numbers on them during World War II in the concentration camps. So a lot of us do have bad reactions to this tattoo idea.
That's true, because as in World War II, people probably felt almost like cattle or animals whenever they were marked like that.
Well, you're talking about tattoos, Doris, and the tattoos that they would have here in Tahiti when they're doing these authentic dances and in their traditional dress are going to be a little bit different from what we might see in our urban centers of the world. For instance, maybe we might see a small tattoo on somebody's shoulder or back. Well, you will see many of the Tahitian dancers, they will have these tattoos all the way up their legs, covering their back, covering their arms. It actually looks like they're wearing something. So it looks like a full costume. So they're doing this traditional dance with the flaming torches, and it's a much different visual.
I really like what she says here. She says that the fire dance really took our breath away, and this is just, you get the idea that it's such a magnificent thing. It's a very scary thing almost, in that they're doing something that could be thought of as being quite dangerous. I'm sure they've practiced many times, so it's not as dangerous as if you or I were to try and do it, but it took their breath away, and so you just get the idea that it's, you gasp and you can barely breathe because you're just imagining the danger that they're putting themselves in.
Right, and these torches, they call them huoba in Chinese, and they used to use them in Taiwan. They use them a lot of places like Hawaii. You light the torch so you can walk on the trail at night because they don't have electric lamps or flashlights, and so they use those torches. They were very useful. And you'll still see them outside of restaurants that have Tahitian food and Polynesian, Hawaiian food, and they'll have one of these burning torches, and even in big cities nowadays.
We call them tiki lamps.
Right, that's right.
Mm-hmm. And well, these flaming torches are really amazing because they can toss them and twirl them around, and when they do that at night, it creates a pattern in the sky.
Right. And did you see any of those?
We did see some of that, and it did take my breath away. It was very amazing. I almost felt shocked and surprised at some of the things that they could do, like cracking coconuts with their bare hands and climbing trees and such.
Now, you'd recommend that people go there for a vacation?
Oh, sure. I would recommend it, definitely.
Okay. Well, let's have our final skit that we have for this lesson. Everybody listen in now and see how you can review the words with us.
Today, we join our traveling twosome, Tim and Terry, as they tour French Polynesia. How are you two doing?
Just great. It's so beautiful here.
That's right. The water is so clear and blue, and the beaches are wonderful places to bask in the sun.
They sure are. French Polynesia has always been known for its beaches and beautiful water. But I'm also looking forward to some of the other fun things I've read about.
Oh, that's right, Terry. I can't wait to try out those ATVs, all-terrain vehicles. It's going to be so much fun ripping around the countryside and climbing mountains.
Just be careful, Tim. I've heard that a lot of the trails are no more than goat paths, and that you may even be riding beside cliffs.
Don't worry, Terry. It will definitely be worth it to get to see the panoramic view from the top of Magic Mountain.
Well, be sure to pack your camera, Tim. While you're doing that, I thought that I'd tour more of the island of Moorea. Moorea is just 12 miles west of Tahiti, and it offers some great tourist activities.
And you can tour Tiki Village and learn about some of the cultural background of the area.
I'm looking forward to learning about all the neat little trinkets they make there.
How about the great food? I heard that they actually show you how some of the traditional foods are prepared.
Do you ever think about anything other than food and cars, Tim?
Terry! Of course I do! Like how much fun it will be to take a dip in the South Pacific. Would you like to join me, Terry?
Okay, Tim. As long as I don't have to dive with sharks, I think I'll be okay.
Okay, now remember that if you want to find out more about this, you can look at our website.
That's right, and you can look down. We have a website here in our magazine, and it's Tahiti Tourism, and you can go there and you can check out about this area and learn more about what this area has to offer as far as tourism.
And you might check the Studio Classroom website because we have different things on there. You can see the different magazines, and you can find the topics that we have and find out. You can see Bill and Ethan and some of us on there. So that's kind of fun, too.
That's one thing I want to recommend, Doris. You can actually see our video, Topic Talks, and actually see, of course, Doris, but also everyone on our panel today, Phil, Ethan, and me. Bill, you can see videos of.
Okay, so we're glad that you've been with us in this program. We hope that you're going to always enjoy Advance, no matter what age you are. Everyone enjoys Advance because you can have a window to the world. And we certainly had a window to a beautiful part of the world the past few days. I hope you can go on a nice trip someplace this summer. And even if you don't do dangerous extreme sports, you can do sports like swimming and golfing and have a good time wherever you are.
And I want to thank Doris for everybody for joining us today.
And I've learned a lot, and so I hope you have too, and I hope you have a good rest of the week.
And don't forget to learn how to scuba dive some of these days, right, Bill?
Absolutely.
Okay, we'll see you next lesson. Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.